Could we start by talking a little bit about your regular job and any ways in which your routine has changed since the COVID outbreak?
So my regular job is as a primary care physician at Mass General, and I do that part of my time, and then the other part of my time is working. I direct the Center for Physician Well-being at Mass General for the Department of Medicine, and so in that role, I develop programs and initiatives to support the well-being of physicians. And so I split my time between seeing patients and doing that work. And other things about my like regular day-to-day life before COVID were I would go to the gym like 5 days a week. I have a almost 6-year-old who we would regularly be out and about playing on playgrounds and play dates and museums and different like the Children's Museum and Legoland and all different ways to entertain and get through the day. And I have family in New York that we would spend a lot of time visiting on weekends, as well as family locally. And so when I think about my routine, everything from how I get to work and commuting in different ways, either walking to work now or driving instead of taking the T and the bus. Where I work, I've been redeployed to run respiratory clinics for Mass General, as well as to help to run as one of the medical directors at Boston Hope and at the convention center. And so I've been doing all different work. And also now when I do see my primary care patients, it's virtually and not in person. And the well-being work that I do, really cool change there is that instead of just focusing on physicians, now we have the ability to focus on all clinicians. Because one thing that COVID has done is it's really brought together all different role groups and all different types of people in the care and really leveled the playing field between a lot of different roles. And that's expanded how we can do that work. I can't go to the gym, which really stinks. And so I've been doing a lot of running outside and walking to places. I was supposed to run the Boston Marathon, which I will not be doing. So I went from like running 22 miles the week before, like everything shut down, to like I'm lucky if I get to run like 3 miles now, because I've been so busy. My family routine has been completely uprooted as well. Not being able to visit with family, not being able to see friends as much. Not being able to really have anywhere to go. Like, thank goodness it's nice out, because it was when it was cold or rainy, it was really hard to figure out like how are we going to entertain our child for an entire day. And like homeschooling and all that kind of stuff. So there's been I basically every part of my life as is with most people.
Could you talk a little bit more about the structural changes at MGH, the precautions, and then also any of the programs that you've implemented for the clinicians' well-being, like those kind of projects?
So structurally, in the beginning, everything closed down, so you couldn't see any patients in the office, and they couldn't do any surgeries unless things were very urgent. And so it was really intense. It was necessary because it was really worrisome trying to figure out who was at risk and how to control for that. And so interestingly, the respiratory clinics at MGH were created to really control exposure for the patients, as well as for the people taking care of them and the staff. And so by basically removing anyone who might potentially even be at risk for COVID and putting them through one central place with like well-oiled routes of like how they would get from their car or their door right up to the clinics, and like knowing what buttons they would touch and making sure that there was a clear way to minimize exposure. And so that we in the clinic knew that like every patient that we saw, we looked at them and said, you probably have COVID. And so that way we could protect ourselves and each other, and that the patients would get the care that they needed in a really specialized way, with the whole clinic was designed just to take care of them, and to like increase their throughput, so that it was minimal time that they had to be, if they weren't feeling well, that they had to be out of their homes. And it was a very cool process, and I told people in the beginning, like, I felt safer there than I did at the grocery store, because at least I knew what I was working with there. And I've never once in this entire time worried about my safety in terms of my PPE or anything else. And we had people who would watch us put on our PPE and take off our PPE, and, oh, you just touched your face, change your gloves or whatever. Like, they were really good about it. And similarly at Boston Hope, we had, watchers and everything as we put everything on. And in there, the whole field hospital, everyone has COVID. So similarly, you're going in just knowing what you're going into, and you protect yourself accordingly. So in the beginning, I digress there slightly, but with the RICs, like, so we the respiratory clinics, we moved all the patients at risk over to that clinic, which then allowed some of the primary care office to actually be able to see some urgent care patients again, knowing that they wouldn't be putting themselves at risk and the patients coming in would be at lower risk. So we could actually reassure our patients who really just needed to see somebody that they could come in and it wouldn't be, exposing themselves to COVID. And then over time, now that numbers are starting to come down, we're starting to be able to see a few more patients in the office, but primarily all of our visits have been have been virtual over Zoom.
Right.
About the work that the center's doing, like,
Yeah.
that was really interesting in the beginning. Like, people were just so freaked out and working really hard, and like, grocery stores are closed and they don't know how to get to work. And so a lot of it was just figuring out how to support people. And really we started with just like, using a framework of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, of just like, what are people's basic needs, like food, shelter, clothing, water, childcare, things like that. And then
Right.
how do you expand beyond that into, transportation and other things. And so we scrambled initially. And it's interesting because a lot of the work that we did before COVID was like, don't focus on like things just for individuals, focus on the system. Let's think about the problems that are in the system. That's where we need to focus our efforts. And then all of a sudden COVID came, it's like, help the people, help the individuals. And so the system ended up, working really smoothly. And so it was less about the system and more individuals, and finding ourselves in a transition rolling back to the system again, which is a good thing. But making sure that we're still keeping an eye out for how people are doing.
Definitely. That's really amazing that you were able to set up that much that quickly.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. The good thing is we have a great team who does this work together, but also there were a tremendous number of resources that made themselves available pretty quickly, like apps and websites and speakers for like, we'll give you our time for free, and Blue Bikes saying like, healthcare workers get free memberships. Like, there was all this like free stuff. It was actually hard at first keeping track of it all. And so we actually ended up making a web we made well like a weekly newsletter that goes out that just has everything organized in one place. And while you may not read the whole newsletter, it's like a place that you can reference back to. And then we updated our website to sort of match what's in the newsletter, so that people know where to look. And thinking about how can we support people on their mental health, their emotional well-being, and that's another area resources made themselves available. There was like so much that became available right away, and it actually became overwhelming for people. And so what we tried to do was like organize and curate those resources so that people could understand like okay, if I'm looking for this type, if I'm looking for one-on-one, I, these are the different type of resources. If I'm looking for group-based, if I'm looking for, like on my own, like I just want to learn about something. So it allowed us to sort of walk through that and figure out what people really needed.
That's amazing. And then shifting gears a little bit, do you have a memorable patient experience, either directly or indirectly related to the pandemic, that you could share?
I can think of a few actually. The first patient that I saw actually really just for me highlighted all the ways that we had to work harder to make this easier for clinicians and how scary it is. So like the first patient I saw, he came in, like his chief complaint was like urinary frequency or something like not COVID. And it was early on, like the Biogen conference had just happened, so we weren't totally segregating these patients yet. The RICs weren't open yet. And I had like just gone to a town hall where I like learned all about what I needed to do, and I watched the videos and did the trainings. And the guy comes in and I'm in the room with him, and all of a sudden he tells me he has a cough, a fever, he's losing weight, he's having shortness of breath, and he just got off two airplanes in the last week. And I was just like, oh my God, this guy has COVID. And testing wasn't available, and I had to jump through all these hoops to try to figure out what to do. But then I was like there in the room and I didn't even know what to do. Should I leave the room? Should I stay in the room? I've already been exposed. What do I do? And then I was freaking out. I like screwed up everything possible. Luckily, I didn't get COVID, but it really for me just highlighted like how the difference between readiness and preparedness. And I, despite anyone's preparedness, I was not ready. And that was really hard, and I was so distressed. And then I was like worried about every human I saw. I was like, am I going to get them sick? Is this going to be my fault? Am I going to bring COVID to everybody? And it was like for 2 weeks, I felt like I was this ticking time bomb of COVID until like my time was up. And then I was like, okay, I guess I'm okay. And so that was just like, and just how that distressed I was that whole time, like really just highlighted for me the work we had to do, and I could understand the needs that existed. And then in the RIC, I saw this young girl. I think she was 20, and she was okay. Like she wasn't that sick, but she like clearly had COVID. And I'm talking to her and explaining to her like you probably have COVID, and the tests, we didn't have all the tests available then, so we're not going to test you. We're just going to assume that you have it. And she burst into tears. And I was like, you're gonna be okay. It's all right. And she said, I don't know what to do. I live in Chelsea in an apartment, and it's a 3-bedroom apartment with one bathroom. And in it is my sister with asthma, her son. They share a room together. I share a room with my grandma, who's 80. And then my parents share a room, and like her dad was sick with something else. And she's like, what am I gonna do? I can't quarantine. And this is before we had any hotels or field hospitals or anything for this girl. And so her and I spent a half hour like walking through like every bodily function that one has and walking through everything she needed to do to try to protect her family. And it just struck me like, this, like, how much this disease would affect her and her family with her life circumstances versus someone who has, like, a 5-bedroom house, like, with a huge backyard and multiple bathrooms and everything. And then that was right before the huge outbreak in Chelsea. And so it was like I kept seeing things right before they became like a really big deal, and it helped me appreciate the importance of the work that needed to follow.
Definitely. And then in a lot of my interviews, people have mentioned the strengthened sense of community among health workers. Could you talk a little bit about your experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the Boston Hope experience was a great example of that. Basically, the staff of Boston Hope, which was a field hospital that was set up to have half of it was for homeless patients who tested positive, and needed to, but weren't sick and just needed a place to rest out their quarantine. And then people who were ill and didn't have any place to go for the rest of their quarantine or just needed like more support before they went home. And the staff of that was docs from a primary care group in Boston that was basically closed, and their providers really had nothing else to do, and there wasn't like an inpatient option for them to work like we have at MGH. And nurses from that group as well, and nurse practitioners, and then doctors from MGH, some doctors from MGH in the Brigham. But then like school nurses, and then there was like the military team was in there. So you basically had like this whole group of people from all around the area, and for some like the military people around the country, all coming together, having never worked together before, working in a place that had never been a place one would take care of patients before, like it's a convention center. And it was the most elegant and like beautiful experience working together there. Like nobody was like top of the food chain. There was no, like it was just a completely level playing field, and like everybody's voice mattered. Everybody talked to everybody, and we were all just in it together. And most people didn't know anybody else either, so you were kind of coming in like, looking to make friends. It wasn't like you came in with like you with your clique already established. So it was just like a really cool place, and everybody wanted to be there. It wasn't like anyone was forced to be there. And so people were incredibly engaged, and it was so inspiring working with these people and the care that we were able to give these patients at like the scariest time of their experience was really inspiring.
Do you feel like that strength and sense of community has translated to our overall society, or do you feel like COVID has done more to divide us?
I wish I could say that it has, but then you look on the news and you see what's going on, and I think there are some ways where I think there are some ways where we're really unified, and God, we want so much to just like be around other people, but I think the problem is that there are people who are in it and connected to it and get it and are doing what they want to be is supposed to be doing, then there are other people who are not. And then anytime you have two groups like that, you're gonna have frustration. And as it goes on long enough and uncertainty starts to settle and people start getting really activated and anxious, and then you add some terrible situation like what's happened with Mr. Floyd, and then it just goes crazy.
Right.
And so, like, I love the protests. I love it. And I think it's a beautiful expression of people coming together. It kills me to see the violence. But I do love the activism of people coming together and people saying this isn't okay. And I think the combination of how COVID has disproportionately affected non-white people and how racism is disproportionately affecting non-white people. It's like even if you could ignore racism before, if you were that kind of person, you can't ignore it anymore. And so in some ways, I think that's bringing more people to the table to be together than before. But I do worry about this like sense of like chaos and anarchy that's going on with some people.
Right. Have you seen any impact from the protests on like COVID numbers, or is it too early to tell?
It's too early so far. Yeah, we're
Got it.
kind of like on the edge of our seat about it. So we'll know in the next like week to 2 weeks from
Right.
what's going on. You look at the pictures and not a lot of people are wearing masks.
Exactly.
But it's also thinking of like there, I think people are doing a really good job right now thinking of like you could show up to a protest, but there's also other things that you could do. And I think people are getting more vocal about what are the other things other than like posting on, social media. This isn't okay. Like what are the other things that you can do?
Right.
So, I do think that spirit of like We've completely learned how to do everything remote. So how can we use that to our advantage and harness that to support the anti-racism movement that's resurging right now?
Right. Are there any common misconceptions that you hear among patients, or coworkers, or even in the media about COVID?
Like it's not real,
Yes.
which any of us taking care of these patients, like it's so very real, and that like only old people are an issue, and like if you're young and healthy, you don't need to worry about wearing a mask. Those are the things I hear a lot, and I live in Southie, and you see like all these young people crowding the beach, and it kills me to see it. But the idea is that like I'm not wearing a mask to protect me, I'm wearing a mask to protect you. And so I think the awareness of how serious this is and the importance that one individual can play in preventing the spread of COVID, I think is a really important part of this. I think the other thing that people aren't necessarily as aware of is that like a vaccine isn't going to be here like next month, and a solid treatment probably won't either. Like this is going to be going on for a couple of years, and I think a lot of people have been like, oh, we'll just like hunker down until it's over, without really thinking about the widespread need to continue to keep the stuff up. And so you look at pictures of like after in like 1918 after the Spanish flu, you'll see like people at a football game all wearing masks. Like that needs to be us for a long time until everything is settled, and that's not going to happen overnight. So I think that that's a really important part of this. And I'm trying to think about the other things where like my blood pressure starts to go up when I hear people say it. I think those are the three that drive me bonkers the most. And the other misconception is that like just because there's a blood test available, we should all get it. Like we don't really know what to do with the blood test yet. So right now I'm telling people not to go and be tested and that's sort of the party line here at Partners. Until we know what to do with this test, we can't really use it. I would say those are the biggest ones that
Right.
I spend a lot of time re-educating people about.
Yeah, I think it'll also be interesting to see, at least for me, how the college setting changes. Because
Yeah.
just hearing from Northeastern and from my friend's schools, kind of what the plans are for the fall, and how like everyone will be wearing masks inside and outside, and you won't be able to have any visitors who don't live in your specific dorm building. So it'll definitely change a lot of how college is usually run.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be really interesting.
And like I think, when you have rules imposed upon you at a time when you thought you'd otherwise be free, the natural inclination is to push against those rules or to figure out how to work around those rules. But this is the kind of thing where, like I was saying earlier, like we have to all be in it together. Otherwise it's just going to continue. And it's really hard as a healthcare worker hanging around in PPE all day long, hearing someone say like, oh, but the mask is uncomfortable. And it's like, do you know how uncomfortable it is for me to go to work every day?
Right.
Or even worse, for these patients to feel sick with COVID while they're ill or dying, or for their families to not be able to be with them because they have COVID. Like that's uncomfortable.
Right. Would you say that kind of hearing those misconceptions, given everything that you're doing every day, is one of the hardest parts of working during the pandemic?
It's interesting. We get like I don't know that healthcare workers have ever been more beloved than now.
Yes.
Like oh, thank you so much. Thank you for all you do. And you're like, I don't know, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah.
But and so like that's awesome. But what's I think what's and I think what's been great is like the patient experience has been really bonding because they don't have anyone else that they can talk to. So like you really kind of take it on yourself to be there for them, and they embrace that. And so it's really hard to be so respected in some ways and have people like supporting you so much, but then they can't even be bothered to go and wear a mask like on their way to the grocery store. And it is really hard. I went for a run along the water in Southie the other day, and as I'm running, I'm just like seeing all these people not in masks, and it just is like, what am I doing? Like, why am I like working so hard and not seeing my family and doing all these things when these people can't even be bothered? And so, yeah, it's really disappointing.
Are there any things that you feel could have been done differently, not just politically, but as a society, to prepare for and respond to COVID?
I think we spent so much time convincing ourselves this wasn't going to be a big deal that it's no wonder these people are like, oh, it's fine, it will blow over, because that's what we told everybody in the beginning. And I feel like if from the beginning, everybody just took it really seriously and said, we don't know what this is, but what we do know is that if we just like lock this thing down for like 3 or 4 weeks, we should be good. And we didn't do that. And so I think, unfortunately, we got serious too late. And then people either didn't believe it or were frustrated. And a lot of people died and are still. So I would say that was the biggest mistake, I think, that we made, was spending so much time convincing people that it wasn't serious, that by the time we asked them to take it seriously, it was too late for many.
Right. Are there any lessons that you'll take away as a doctor from working during the pandemic?
I would say that one of the things that has been really meaningful for me during this time is just realizing how grateful I am to be able to be somebody's doctor and to serve in that role. I know so many people are like, oh, I wish there was something I could do. I feel so useless. And like, that is the farthest from how I feel right now. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm really grateful that I can like walk in a room and sit down with someone and help them. That I get to come to work every day, that I get to be around other people, even though we're all like masks and gowns and everything, you still get to talk to people in person every day. And you feel like you're a part of it. And so I really do appreciate that part of it. And when I get to see my usual patients on a virtual visit, it's so good to see them, like to have that taste of your pre-COVID life and just see people like in their kitchens and wherever else they are, where they're Zooming. I'm very grateful that this is the path that I chose for myself, even when it's been hard. It's rich with meaning.